Welcome to the Explicit Content Podcast. This is Truth, Lies, and Digital Marketing.
The Social Media Lounge at Adobe Summit 2019, presented by Katie Martell, with guest Carlos Gill.
I am recording, and that's going to be our intro. Hi, Carlos.
How's it going, Katie?
Thanks so much for being part of this Explicit Content Podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You know, the rules of the road here are it's, you know, given the name Explicit Content, you get to be pretty explicit. So I want you to hold nothing back. Mm. I want you to absolutely be unapologetically honest.
That sounds dangerous.
Really, though, I was excited to meet you because I've been fangirling from afar, which I feel like happens with multiple people that you meet at these industry events. As Carlos mentioned, we are live from the Adobe Summit 2019 in Las Vegas at the beautiful Venetian, somewhere deep in the bowels of the building. And personally, I'm here because I'm part of the Marketo community. And obviously, after the acquisition by Adobe, I was excited to see how the two worlds collided. And I hear this is your first Adobe Summit as well.
This is my first Adobe event that I attend. So I've been in this marketing game now for a decade. And I've gone to, like, I don't know if it's okay to mention, like, Dreamforce or...
Oh, yeah. This is
like
a Switzerland of podcasts.
Brand agnostic.
You got it.
All right, cool. So, yeah. So, like, you know, I've been to Dreamforce and... You know, a lot of other, you know, partner type events. I used to work in tech also, so we would host our own events too here in Vegas. But no, it's my first Adobe event. I think it's really cool. Like I was saying to you before we hit that record button, there's a lot of creatives here. You know, there's a lot of people that use the, honestly, the tools that my team members use back in the office. I wish they were here with me because I think they would get probably more value in terms of like hearing about like the creative suite and, you know, they use Premiere and all these different tools. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all in all, just cool to be here surrounded with great people that you know, are influential in the digital marketing space and they're creatives as well. And I think that's how we all learn is just
I think so.
Learning from one another.
Let me ask you a real question though.
Let's do it.
Do you ever get weirded out when somebody says to you, Carlos, you are an influencer?
Yes. I don't like the word influencer. And I'll be honest with you, I think influencer marketing is a bunch of bullshit. So I'm not a fan of influencer marketing.
Tell me everything.
I think what happens is brands do these influencer activations because they want to get like a very quick hit on the radar. They want to get a spike of engagement and it's not sustainable. As soon as an event is over, as soon as a campaign is over, as soon as an activation is over, their engagement like tapers off, right? So where I'm going with this is I'm a big fan of brand ambassadorships. And I think that's the play that brands should be thinking. Instead of like trying to work with every influencer under the sun, try to work with a few people that you can regularly compensate throughout the year and have them not just use your products, but endorse them as well and be product specialists to their own communities for your products. And, you know, I'm in the process, Katie, of writing a book. The book is called The End of Marketing and it comes out October of this year.
Congratulations.
And thank you so much. So the whole premise of The End of Marketing is humanizing your brand in the age of social media and AI. And I have an entire chapter devoted to why I dislike influencer marketing. And in full disclosure, I think there's going to be a lot of influencers that read this book and they're going to be like, oh shit, like Carlos Gill's like basically like trying to like take money out of my pocket. But instead, what I'm trying to do is educate both brands and creators in terms of how you can have a better marriage with one another. So as a creator, if you start approaching brands and stop talking about your following, because look, like, let's be honest, if a brand wants to have your following, they can go out and they can spend money on Facebook ads, they can buy followers, like they can do all the things that person can do. The biggest difference is you're talking about a human being, an individual, comparing them to a billion or trillion dollar brand. Like mm-hmm. you're talking about like comparing apples to a grape. There's no comparison. So with that being said, the reason why brands should look to work with creators is because of the content that they make, not because of the following. And that's a very different relationship than influencer marketing because it's not at that point. It's working with a brand ambassador to create content for you. And I think that's really where this is going to head to. Once the book comes out, you'll start seeing me speak more about influencer marketing in that context. And I think from a brand standpoint, they need to be made aware that no one really cares on social media about your brand if you're not truly socializing. And I come from the corporate world, so I get what it's like to be under the gun and have a campaign that you need to promote and you're working to the 11th hour writing content. Like I get all that stuff that marketers deal with. So I'm empathetic because I come from their world. And I have an agency now, so we try to make it as easy and seamless as possible for our clients. But this all comes down to humanization. It comes down to, you know, relatability. I think that's the biggest thing.
I think so. I love this provocative stance that you've taken. It's not offensive. I don't think any influencer who sees their role as truly there to help the brand, an influencer with the motivation of truly helping a business grow and connect with their buyers, I don't think they'll be offended by it. I think the ones that'll be offended are the ones that are looking to make a quick buck, that are looking to, you know, tweet a few things, get charged to tweet. I like this win-win, mutually beneficial, equitable relationship.
Well, like, I'll give you an example. I live in LA, right? So
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm just kidding.
I meet with a lot of creatives, and you know, there's one that comes to mind immediately that they told me they make 50K for one Instagram post.
50K for one.
50K for one.
Yeah, like, I've seen that. You've seen that with, like, the Kardashians. You see that with a lot of celebrities.
There are parts in the United States that 50K, that like a combined household makes less than 50K, but yet this person's making 50K for an Instagram post. So I turned to this influencer and said to them, well, what if I could get you a 50K brand deal that you now are going to get paid between 4 to 5K a month, and that's guaranteed income? Wouldn't you rather do that? And the guy's like, eyes lit. He's like, yeah, like, I'd much rather get guaranteed income every single month. So then it's like, when you start flipping influencer marketing into brand ambassadorship, now you're having very real conversations around, how do I get four companies to pay me 200 grand a year, guaranteed cash, as opposed to getting one brand to pay you 50K here, and then you don't work for a few months, and then you get another 50K gig, and so forth.
And the results are going to be a lot stronger too over time. I think the people that are spending money on those on influencers that have bigger reaches, they're spending out of their ad budgets, right? It's essentially an ad.
It's an ad buy, right? Is what it is.
And it's a point in time. It's a short-term mindset looking at this short-term spike in engagement or driving to a call to action or promotion. I think what you're describing takes a little bit of courage from the marketer's point of view to look very long-term and say, how do we build more equal relationships with these influencers? How do we build more long-term?
Speaking of influencer, like, wow, these guys that just put these plates of food in front of us are making me very jealous right now.
So those of you listening, I'll describe the scene.
They're influencing me on, to hit up the buffet here when we're done.
There were two people who shall remain nameless to protect the innocent who just walked into our interview session with two giant plates of food. And that's kind of all I can think about right now.
I see.
But we're gonna be
chicken, mashed potatoes, and macaroon. Wow.
We're gonna be focused, and we're gonna keep.
But you
focused
see, but
on
you know, focus, right? Like, being unapologetic and explicit, right? Like, what just happened right here is the equivalent of someone sliding in your DMs. No, like, their in-person version of that, or someone getting your attention with a tweet or with a Facebook post. Like, you and I are having this conversation. People come in with food. We get distracted, and that's the world that we're living in today, digitally speaking. Keeping someone's attention, retaining them, keeping them around for the long haul is very, very difficult for anyone to do.
Right.
You factor brands into the mix. If you're just going to sell all day from your social media handles, then you're not building any real sense of community. You're just using social media to sell.
Right. And to amplify. And I think that's the biggest issue. You're back to the core of what I think is your great argument around why influencer marketing, as we know it, needs to die. Because all it is are these spikes in amplifying existing stuff. And I'll be honest. You and I are at the show. And by the way, we have to give a disclosure that we are being paid to be here by Adobe.
As influencers.
As influencers. They paid for us to be here. They paid our flight, our hotel. And we were asked to amplify content from their sessions. And I do get that, because I have followers, you have followers.
Here's the biggest difference,
though. They
trust
us.
And here's why I'm here. At my company, Gil Media Co., we use Adobe. The Adobe Creative Cloud, the Creative Suite. So I at least use the product, right? Where if I came here and I'd never even used any of these tools and services, and I was completely oblivious, I'd be like, all right, like, I'm here for a free trip to Vegas.
Right.
You know, like, again, going back to, like, you want to be honest, we're going to be honest. So if we're going to go down this path and talk about it, that's why I say influencer marketing for most brands, if they're just dangling a carrot in front of someone, yeah, most people are going to jump.
Yeah.
When they see that care in front of them.
Yep.
But when you start thinking of this more as brand ambassadorship, it's a completely different conversation.
I agree. And I think part of that is the influencer themselves getting to know the customers, if they're not already one or don't already work with them like you do. I think that's part of it. If you're just paying for a promotion, paying for the amplification, you're not getting that subject matter expertise of what are my customers actually care about. So I love this model of you're calling it brand ambassadorship. I think it happens a bit, and I don't think it happens enough. Any tips for companies that are looking to kind of make the shift? Is it an internal issue they have to deal with?
You know, it's somewhat of a release of control from putting the ownership of brand marketing and your social media team into what gets communicated outward, into putting the control of your partners. I don't necessarily call it an agency. I don't call it an ambassador, influencer. I call it a partner. So when you work with a partner, like in my case, I run an agency and I have corporate clients, but at the same time, I also double up as a talent. And when I work in either one of these roles, I'm wearing different hats, but I'm working with a client as a partner. And I'm advising them through this process. What do you want to accomplish? Oh, well, you want to get more clicks to your website, more people signing for your loyalty program, more engagement on social media. I get it. Let's dissect your KPIs out and your objectives, and let's create a strategy for each one of these runways, I call them, because it's different, right? If you are a brand that's trying to drive more people to join your loyalty program, that's not the same conversation as let me get engagement on social media.
Right.
There's different tactics. There's different creative that you make. And I think that going back to what makes a brand ambassador, it's someone that can fill that role as a content creator slash influencer, quote unquote, but also more of a partner and a strategist, someone who embodies the brand. I turn down a lot of stuff that come my way from brands because for one reason or another, I'm not a customer. I don't embody what the brand stands for. I would never be a customer of the brand. And those are like very real scenarios that all of us, for the most part, that are put into these opportunities are faced with. Like at one point, are you willing to endorse a brand for money or a free product or an experience versus just saying no? And again, if I'm going to work with a company, it's someone that even if I wasn't paid, I have no problem swiping your credit card and doing business with them because I believe in them.
Isn't this interesting? So you're asking influencers to be more strategic. You're asking marketers to be more strategic in how they choose influencers. Mm-hmm. I like this. This is not provocative for the sake of being provocative. This is good advice.
Strategy drives everything, Katie. You know,
that's a tweetable moment. We're just gonna
everyone here in the
drop
room,
the mic. Strategy trumps everything.
Strategy drives everything. You know, we talk so much about content and we talk so much about community and all these feel-good sayings of, you know, content is king and whatnot. But at the end of the day, what are you trying to accomplish with any of these mediums? And I say this when I'm on stages. Social media can be a complete waste of time. Huge waste of time.
They're designed to be, right? Their attention sucks. And I think for a brand, it's funny to hear on the back end, even marketers wasting their time on these.
And marketers can waste their time. Like, you know, we're here amplifying content that we see at sessions and whatnot, but like, I enjoy more doing this. Mm-hmm. I enjoy sitting face to face with you. I enjoy interacting with the homies here in the room because that's where I fully believe the magic happens, is in the relationships and it's in the one-to-ones that you have with people. Now, if you're a brand, again, taking it back to the brand world, and you have, let's say, 100,000 followers on Instagram, can you personally reach them all? No, but there are opportunities which you can still engage with them as a human face.
Right.
So you look at a platform like Instagram, again, someone direct messages you because they have a bad experience with your brand. It takes you more time to write that curated response than to grab a phone, okay, and direct message a customer back and say like, hey, Katie, thank you so much for being a customer of ours. I'm sorry that you had a bad experience. You know, drop your address, you know, in the comments or in the DM because we want to make it up to you.
I see.
Like, things like that are human touches that you can implement into social. For one reason or another, they're not.
Well, I think a lot of brands, to your point, can't move that fast. We saw a lot today about agility on stage. I think a lot of it is being willing to react in real time. And that can be really difficult for the larger the organization. A lot of times they do have an individual assigned, but that individual, especially in my world of B2B, one individual might cover 10 to 15 individual business unit social handles across all the different channels that they manage. It's kind of a remarkable ask.
I went through this when I worked at BMC Software running social media. That was the last company I worked at before I went on my own.
And it's the one that pushed you over the edge.
It's the one that pushed me out the door and into entrepreneurship. But with that being said, when I worked at BMC, we had about 7 or 8 different business units, 7 or 8 different Twitter accounts, 7 or 8 different Facebook pages. They all need content. And guess what? People at the business unit level don't want to manage it because they feel that social media is not their job.
Do you mean marketers at the individual business?
People that work in product marketing, field marketing, they would all want to see at the table.
Interesting. Can you tell me about I wanted to actually talk about this role because I love that your official title was Head of Global Social Media for BMC Software. When you were there, social media is always kind of pushed under a PR communications top funnel function within a marketing department. It's typically maybe somebody's job plus a few other responsibilities. Rarely, and I mean, I guess it depends on the size of the company, is it a full-time position? Now, I wanted to know about, first and foremost, were you the first person that owned social media as this new role of head of global social media?
No. But what happened was there was a gap of about 6 months from the person I replaced leaving to me coming on board.
And how big was the team that worked with you or for you?
The team was a decent size. It wasn't huge. I had two direct reports. We had an agency that we worked with. Yeah. So to manage corporate social, it was fine. But when you start like cascading out to business units that all want to have their own presence on social media, someone has to write the content. Someone has to work with the in-house creative department to create content. And that's where I think the disconnect happens. Like in organizations, everyone wants to have a seat at the table on social media. But the reality is that not everyone's willing to take ownership of it. And the same thing happens in B2C. Same thing happens in B2C as well. Like I ran social media at Winn-Dixie and Save-A-Lot. Those are two supermarket chains. And like, let's analyze a grocery store. When you go to a grocery store, every single shelf, like in every single product on the shelf, is part of a product category. So if you go to frozen foods, there's a frozen food category, right? Within frozen foods, there's like frozen pizza. There's a person that works at a supermarket chain whose entire job is making sure that there's frozen pizza stocked at all times. And that frozen pizza has the best price point possible in the circular. That's their job, 365 days out of the year. That person wants to ensure that when their pizza's on sale, the social media team is gonna promote that pizza. Then you have the person who's over health and beauty, that's over all the shampoos and soaps, that wants to ensure that their shampoos and soaps also have coverage on social media.
Oh, fascinating.
So B2B, from my perspective, has a lot less business units.
I never looked at it like
consumer
that.
Consumer marketing has many more business units.
How did you manage all of those incoming requests?
You know what? You have to juggle a lot of balls in the air.
Do you decide whether you like better? Like you're a croissant guy versus a lady shampoo? So croissant gets the ad.
I will say like, for anyone listening to this, make sure that you become friends with the person that runs social media at your company. It's a very influential role.
It's good advice.
Because that person ultimately is going to be able to dictate how much coverage you get on the company's corporate social media channels. They're also able to advise you on things like what makes for good content, how to get resources. Like there's a lot of times where I'd go to one of these folks at Winn-Dixie and be like, hey, get me 50 grand and I'll make sure that we promote the hell out of Pepsi over Coke for the next month. And all of a sudden they get 50 grand in budget and I've got 50 grand Facebook ad money, right?
Just like that.
It's understanding like the dynamics of the corporation, how money flows, who's who, and align those with priorities that you have, but then align them with the priorities of the business.
You're like the godfather of, you know, social media at grocery chains. Like internally, that role is fascinating. Do you a favor, leave the money in the briefcase, get a social ad.
Yeah, like, you know, when I got the job at Winn-Dixie, end of 2011, beginning 2012, I was tasked to be a team of one to start social media for a $1 billion company, one of the largest supermarket chains in the U.S.
I had no challenge.
Ad budget whatsoever.
Really?
Zero budget for creative, zero budget for ads, zero budget for resources, because I needed to justify that this was actually going to move the needle for the brand.
I see, because it was a new initiative.
It was new. Yeah, they never had anyone before I came along.
Can you tell us a little bit about how it worked out, how you proved its impact?
Yeah, so I proved it, honestly, by scratching and clawing my way. And I actually document this quite a bit in my book. First of all, I created a social media presence for myself. Aside from like the Carlos Gill brand, it was called Winn-Dixie Carlos. So if you go to twitter.com right now, / Winn-Dixie Carlos, you'll see my Winn-Dixie persona living out there still online. I do that purposely. So when I meet people like you, they can go ahead and do it. And then they're like, oh, like, wow. So I basically created this corporate avatar and I use that to start creating content. And then I would show our CMO like, hey, like this is what I'm doing personally.
Interesting.
Imagine if like our field marketing team was doing this and we had like our 12 field marketing managers out there in the field
representing the brand personally.
Imagine as a company if we're doing this. Again, like we're talking 2012, not 2020.
Right.
So social media was still somewhat new for brands.
And very much cast off millennials did.
I didn't get the green light to launch a Facebook page or a Twitter account until about 90 days at the company. And then we were off to the races. I discovered that growing with no money for content and not having any resources, being a team of one is really a challenge.
Yeah.
So this is where I had to get gangster. And I had to go to various business units. And I literally had to negotiate with the business units, like, hey, like, you've got 100K to spend this month on advertising of any kind. Instead of putting 100K into print, give me 25K for social. And keep your 75K for print. But give me my 25K for social, because I'm going to be able, this is what I'm going to be able to do. I'm going to be able to target people. I can measure it. You can't measure shit with print. So very quickly, I made friends and enemies within the organization.
I'm sure.
Because all the old school folks that are like, you know, hey, like, this circular, you know, goes out every Sunday, and so it's driving sales. I was the one that was coming in as a punk 28-year-old kid. And I was like, fuck that. Like, it's all about social, baby.
And you were able to do these mini, almost like experiments within the company to prove out baby steps to get more.
Yeah, so like, get the more great budget. Thing is, like, yeah. When CPGs would come around, you know, consumer packaged good manufacturers like PepsiCo, Coca-Cola, Unilever, Mondelez, P&G, these conglomerates literally print money and give them to retail distribution partners.
Right.
And I like talking about this stuff, honestly, Katie, because, like, I never even talk about this. I think this might be the first podcast I ever go on record.
Really?
And talk about, like, the grocery industry.
I never knew that was the case.
Like, I don't think I've ever spoken about this, so I like this. So where I'm going with this, right, is that these CPGs have what's called shopper marketing dollars. And they give these shopper marketing dollars to brands that are going to be the most aggressive in marketing their products. So for example, I would literally have the shopper marketing manager for Coca-Cola one month come to me and say, hey, I've got 100K that I'm either going to give to Winn-Dixie, to Publix, mm-hmm. or to Walmart. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with it if I give you this 100 grand? And it's not like they're giving me 100 grand. They're giving it to the company for budget,
right,
and for whatnot. I'd say, look, I'm going to run a Facebook ad campaign, or we'll do, back then, Woobox was this big platform where people would create these social media games.
What was Woobox?
Woobox. I don't even know if Woobox exists anymore.
I think
anymore.
I missed that in my Woobox, social media life.
So like circa 2011, 12, 13, these Facebook contests were really popular. Okay.
Isn't that how Cambridge Analytica got all
its data? It was literally like our Facebook page, and you're going to be entered to win some shit.
I see.
Like, it was on that level.
I see.
It was spin a wheel. Like, we did one time this, like, spin the wheel to, like, see if you get free steaks for a year.
I see. Yep.
Right? Hokey stuff like that. But it would work. It would help us. It would help us drive user acquisition,
yep,
in terms of email addresses, and it would help us drive user acquisition with likes on Facebook. So that's how we were able to grow. So again, Coca-Cola would come around. They'd be like, hey, I've got 100 grand. How are you going to use it? I'd call this company I worked with at the time that would actually do these promotions. And it was like, I don't know, 25, 30K run promotion. So like, all right, we're going to do an online game and we're going to run Facebook ads. Publix wasn't doing it. Walmart wasn't offering that to them.
Interesting.
And that's how I was able to grow.
I love this. And I never knew that was how the money was spent. Did you have to report back on the performance? And would that earn you more budget later on?
To be honest with you, no.
Yeah.
No. It was a total brand awareness play.
We are revealing all the holes in this process, yeah, in this industry, and all the, like, gaps.
I write about this. I document a lot of this now, 7 years later, in my book, because where I'm at professionally now is much different than where I was back then.
Sure. Sure.
And I realized, like, how scrappy I had to be.
That's the word that keeps, I hate, you know, I don't want to use it because I wasn't sure if you'd be offended by it, but I come from a startup background, and the word scrappy means resilience and resourcefulness to me. And it's a pride
makes
that
you
I
happen.
Feel. You were scrappy in these situations. And I think that's a beautiful kind of example of maybe why you've been so successful,
yeah,
since.
You have to make things happen.
You really do. And you have to be willing to, like I've been saying, you have to scrape your way through, fight your way through, fight for something that you believe and no one else around you believes, right, and then prove it out with data so you can do it again. It's an entrepreneurial mindset, right? It's this go-getter mindset. I love it. And clearly you must do it. It must bode well for you now in your role as an agency owner.
Right.
How big is the agency?
So we have 17 members.
Congrats.
Not 17. We have seven.
Seven members.
Seven. Single digit. But we're working. We're in hyper growth mode. Look,
more than one is an agency.
It's
and carrying any full-time employees means you've figured some shit out.
Yeah.
Congrats.
You know, there's so many lessons on entrepreneurship I've learned just in the last 6 months, you know.
Nothing teaches you like
cash
jumping in.
Cash flows oxygen. You have to constantly be closing. You constantly have to be on top of clients as you invoice them. Like, there's so many things. I could sit here for the next 2 hours and have this conversation with you around entrepreneurship, but it's fun. Like, it really stretches your true potential. Like, I think every single person's talented. Everyone. Everyone is talented. All these folks I'm looking at are talented. Everyone in this room is talented. But if you don't put yourself in the right situations to stretch that talent as far as you can, you're always going to just kind of be in this holding pattern. I felt right. In the time I worked in corporate, that's where I was at.
Right.
Like, I wasn't necessarily able to hit my full potential because there was always a boss of a boss of a boss. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, like, who is this guy?
Go back into your box.
Go back to your little cubicle. Go do your little social media shit and, like, stay out of, like, the big boys' yard.
Yeah.
And, you know, call it maturity or just learning. And as you grow up, you start realizing, like, this is where the current is going. And if you're not going to listen to me, all right, cool, deuces. I'm going to go where they will listen to me.
Right. Or go carve my own path.
Or I'll go work for myself and I'll work with people that want to listen to me and the ones that don't. You know, hey, keep working with your big agency partners and good luck.
Right.
Wish you the best of luck.
I think that's remarkable. I think you're remarkable. I want to help you get more new business. So please tell the listeners where they can find you and learn more about you.
You know, like, again, keep it 100. This is a relationship-based game. So I could tell you, go to my website. I could tell you, email me. Just go on social media. Find me there. Go to Instagram or Twitter.
Just type in Google the man.
CarlosGill83, and then send me a message directly. And I think, let's just start a conversation.
We've talked about being scrappy. We've talked about how bullshit influencer marketing is. We've talked about what really happens behind the scenes at grocery chains and grocery stores. I don't know about you, man, but I've learned a lot in this interview, and I hope all of our listeners have. So thank you, thank you, thank you for sitting down with me today.
Thank you, Katie.
I really appreciate it.
I love this. When can we do it again?
Let's do it again soon, because I want to hear more about this, you know, what else you consider to be bullshit in the marketing industry.
There's a lot of bullshit.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a good day.
Let's see it.
Thank you for listening to the Explicit Content Podcast. For more information, check out enterprisemarketer.com.